You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted the fame, but not the cover of Newsweek.
Yeah, if you thought I was crazy, probably be right. Good morning to you. Mike McNamara in for a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio. And honestly, I'm excited about the program this morning. And you're going to hear why. I talked about it yesterday. And I do a second radio show back to a place that I lived in North Dakota. And Grand Forks, North Dakota. It's where I started doing radio, but quite by accident. I called in after I was running a play to get sports up there. I'd moved my family up there. I'd gone up there and taken a job because I thought, you know, my son played on a summer hockey team that trained in Grand Forks, and a town of about 70,000 on one side of the river and about 13 on the other side of the river. Minnesota, North Dakota, and home of the University of North Dakota. And, you know, I knew that I'd read that the highest, quality of life in the country was in the Midwest, in cities that had university towns. But we were living in San Diego, and where the hell am I going, right, anytime soon? So I get a phone call from a guy named John Fuhrer. And he said, I've got your name, your son's name, as a defenseman, and a good one. Would you be interested in coming to North Dakota and him playing with kids from, high-quality kids that come from the Western United States and then practicing for about a week and then going up to play in Canada? And I thought, wow, what a great opportunity for John. So a guy named Pierre Lamoureux was a coordinator for John's team, so he called me. Pierre's two daughters now play on the U.S. Women's Olympic team, Monique and Jocelyn Lamoureux, and they're badasses too. They started a fight, I want to say in Toronto. They have some awesome pictures of it. Girls don't fight in hockey, but one of the great sports rivalries in the world today is the U.S. and the Canadian women's national teams, because they get it on, and they don't like each other, so it's awesome. So anyway, we go up to Grand Forks to practice for a week, and I'm sitting in a hotel, an American, right, and that's kind of across the street from the park, and there's a rink there, and so the boys, John and Patrick, go with me. Catherine's still a little bit, kind of a baby, so she stays with Susan. And we're up there for a week, and this town had just been flooded the year before, and they were coming back from a flood, and my kids had so much fun because they didn't have to be supervised. They're running around. At one point Susan called me and says, hey, how's everything going? Where are the boys? I said, everything's going great, and I'm not exactly sure where the boys are. She said, God damn it, I knew I should have let you up there with my kids. I said, nah, it's like living on base. It's a Midwest farm town. And not that bad things don't happen, but, they're with other kids, and they're between here or the rink or Subway, and John's got to come back and take a nap, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, long story short, we wind up moving up there because I thought, in my mind's eye, this is the way my kids are supposed to grow up. They're not supposed to grow up only playing in the backyard. They're supposed to be able to get on their bikes and go places. They're supposed to be able to go down to the park. In North Dakota, when the winter comes, starting about a month ago, there's boards at the parks for outdoor hockey rinks, right? So as soon as the ground freezes, the parks guys go out there with their water truck, and they just pump water into the rink, and then it freezes naturally, and then they do that for a couple days, and then they get a Zamboni on there, and they cut it and even it out, and boom, time to play. And so you come home from school, you grab your skates, you go down the park, right? And, you know, the parks have warming huts out there, and there's a park, you know, there's some college kids sitting in there making sure nobody set somebody on fire. Anyway, so we moved there. I take a job as director of sports for Special Olympics North Dakota, which was a very cool job. Special Olympics, in my opinion, is rivals and maybe is the best thing the Kennedys have ever done. Yeah. It has given opportunities to millions of human beings that would have had and wouldn't have had those kind of opportunities. And really was the beginning of what I believe in is called mainstreaming people with developmental disabilities. It started with Special Olympics. It started with athletics. So anyway, very cool organization. If you ever want a great volunteer experience with your family, go volunteer at Special Olympics. One, you'll have a blast. Two, you'll get more out of it than you give. And three, you'll get thanked for every second you're there. But it's awesome. And then, you know, when you go as a family, you'll at the end of it, you'll have great conversations with your kids about, could I have been like that? Like, what is, you know, mental retardation? What is development, being born developmentally disabled? And that, yeah, but that kid's not. Oh, no, they are. And my kids learned one great lesson that they've never forgotten, and that is everybody just wants to be treated like a human being. And they learned that little, and very cool. So anyway, I do that for a year, and I want to get into the business community. So I take a job running a plate against sports. Some guys I knew were starting it, and they knew I had a background of that. And so I'm running it, and I'm listening to the radio one day at work, and the police shot and killed a guy, which is pretty odd in a town of that size. He had stabbed his mother to death and stabbed his father, and he was in critical condition. And he then is confronted downtown, and a police officer tells him, you know, halt. And he's got a shotgun, and he moves at the police officer. He doesn't. He just keeps coming at the police officer with his knife, and the guy kills him. And the picture in the next day in the paper is of the guy in the street dead, the police officer with his head down and a shotgun in his hand walking away. And there was this huge outcry about why did he have to kill him? Why couldn't he just wound him? And so I'm listening to the radio, and there's the most popular talk show. He's moderating it. He doesn't know anything about deadly force. So I call in and I say, this is a long-winded story to get to why I'm excited about today. So I get in and say, hey, I introduce myself. Hey, my name's Mike. I used to be in the Marine Corps. You know, I've done security duty, guarding nuclear weapons, and I can tell you about deadly force. And so I explain deadly force to him, you know, essentially that, look, that guy's killed somebody. He's got a knife. Do you expect that police officer to try to shoot him in the leg after he's killed somebody and possibly a second person? And then as he racks a second round because he's scared and he's never shot to kill somebody in his life, as he does that, and he gets a stovepipe jam, and now he's got to fight for his life. Is that what we expect from our police officers? And you know, I said no. The answer is no. When he doesn't obey you after he's killed somebody and he's got a weapon, deadly force is authorized. And when you apply deadly force, you shoot to kill him. And so then he kept me on. And I kept answering questions from either other people that called or his questions or whatnot. So the owner of the radio station 2 days later came down and he walked in and he introduced himself. And he said, I think you could do radio. I said, I think I could too. And he looked at me, he said, you do? And I said, no, I listen to talk radio all the time. I argue with those idiots in my car. And most of the time, like, my points are better than theirs. And he started laughing. He said, well, it's not as easy as you think. I said, I'm sure. I said, but, I mean, I enjoy it. I like discussion. And I like articulate discussion. So I started doing radio part-time. Anyway, in the course of that, I met this gentleman by the name of Ralph Kingsbury. And Ralph Kingsbury is an economist, and that's how I crossed paths with him. He would write things to the local newspaper on the economy, either national or local. And so I would have him on and I'd interview him. He's also a farmer. And unbeknownst to me for a number of years, he's a veteran of the United States Army. So, and he's a veteran of the Army, and so he deploys to Korea. So I call him the other day because he had written a letter to the editor and blah, blah, blah. So today you're going to hear the interview I did with him for my other radio show. I did it yesterday. And I don't know in my life if I've ever heard anybody say anything more unselfish than what he says in this interview. Here's a man whose body is racked by Agent Orange. And what he says is, I'm not bitter about it. You know, I've lived a great life. My mom died when she was 63 or 62, something like that. I'm 74. And I've lived in a great country, and I love this country. And I'm thinking, he's got Agent Orange inside of him, and he's losing. He had a heart attack when he was 44. You know, obviously he's moved on with his life, but that was the first sign that, you know, something was really wrong. And he says it, and it, you know, it just, I don't know if it's stunning to me or just something that, you know, that I would never say. And so, therefore, it's stunning to me. But when somebody's going to take away your life, and your response is that I'm not bitter about it, you know, it goes to that thing, where do we get guys like that? So you're going to hear him today. You're also hear a speech Tom Droughty did. He talked about it the last time he was on. He went back to his high school. I think it's Bishop McNamara High School. How about that? Didn't even know there was a bishop in the family. So anyway, you're going to hear from Tom Droughty, and you're going to hear his speech to I don't know if it was K-12 that he gave it or what, but you're going to hear you'll hear his speech to his school, which things that I enjoy. So I'm excited about sharing both those things. The Ralph Kingsbury thing is awesome. The other thing that obviously we'll keep an eye on is the House is finishing up their work on the president's tax reform legislation. So big day in Washington for Republicans as they finally get something done that they told they ran on. And there's also next headline is that there's some kind of deal in the works for Dreamers. And so I'll just say this: the president is piling up, I think, serious accomplishments. And you can, and again, he is his worst enemy. You know, and would these things be done under Mike Pence? Probably, but you know, they're not. They're being done under Donald Trump. And I would tell you, and I think a lot of my peers would tell you, that the defense of the nation is on a much, much better course. That we've resolved to be stronger. And if you want to challenge us, you can get the wood laid to you. And that wasn't the case under President Obama, and I would say the confused nonsense of George Bush, despite all his brainiacs. Anyway, with all of that said, good morning to you. The United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. Merry Christmas. And to the rest of you, happy holiday. And although he was never a Marine, he served in the 7th Infantry Division. And in the interview that you'll hear, he talks about Ralph Kingsbury was categorized 4F, I think, by his draft board. Born in 1943, in the middle of World War II, in the Great Plains. Everybody he knew growing up that was a teacher or a coach was a veteran. And it didn't sit well with him. So the mother of a friend was the head of the draft board, and he went back and he spoke with her. Is there any way I could get reevaluated? And she said, no, I don't think so. She said, but if you go down to the enlistment center and just attempt to enlist, they'll probably take you. He said, okay. Went down and enlisted in the Army. And he said, he makes some comment, but you know, Mac, the tough guys, they were all joining the Marine Corps. I love that. So anyway, you're going to hear the interview with him here in a few minutes. But this is dedicated to Ralph Kingsbury on a Wednesday before Christmas. First time it's ever been dedicated to a member of the United States Army. So you know, I feel the need to play that a second time, okay? I don't know why, but that sounds fucking awesome to me. Okay, let me stop it there. My favorite part of this, when they sing, is when they just yelled, "First you fight." It's a great, great, great line. So here you go, the third time through. Just pay attention. When they sing that line, I don't know, it's the melody of the song and the way the lyrics work, right? The previous line kind of trails off, and then, boom, they yell, "First you fight." Pay attention. There's going to be a quiz.
Our flag shall throw to the And so, my fellow America,
he's okay.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
All right, cloudy and 51 in Quantico this morning. No, honestly, I'm fired up. That's a great song, too. Nobody has a song like we do. Yeah, the whole culture, uniforms, song, our own propaganda, our own mythology. Exactly. Our flag raising. That's right. Camp Lejeune, cloudy and 59, Granbury, Texas. Mostly sunny in 49. Big Timber, Montana. Clouds in 35. 29 Palms, sunny in 42. Pendleton, sunny in 35. Is that awesome? Of all the places we're doing weather, coldest place right now is Camp Pendleton. Don't see that very often. Cloudy dark in 61 in Okinawa. Clear, dark, and 53 in Marsh at the home of Auburn Radio. Mostly cloudy, 47. Feels like 47 because the wind's not blowing. That's how that works. Looking for a high holding 61 degrees today. What in God's name is going on? Yeah, that ain't right. And 30% chance of rain. What? Exactly. We all have our crosses to bear. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll check some news headlines. Then you'll hear from an interview I did with Ralph Kingsbury. And exciting, interesting stuff. So, don't touch that dial, I promise you. You'll hear one of the most humbling interviews you'll ever hear in your life. Right here on your home for Auburn Radio. The All Warrior Radio Network on a Wednesday.
All you veterans, listen up.
Yeah.
This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
All I can say about militarybyowner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. It is that time of year. Come on.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring. Snowing and blowing a bushel of fun. Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bell time and jingle bell time. Dancing and prancing in Jingle Bell Square. In the frosty air, what a bright time. It's a bright time to rock the night away. Jingle bell time is a swell time to go. Gliding in the one horse sleigh.
This is not the song.
Getting up, jingle horse, pick up your feet. Jingle around the clock.
This is it. Yeah, I know it's old. This is my favorite.
Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop. Mistletoe hung where you can see. Couple tries to stop. Rocking around the Christmas tree, let the Christmas spirit ring. Later we'll have some pumpkin pie and we'll do some caroling. You will get a sentimental feeling when you hear voices singing, let's be jolly, set off with bottles of pop. Everyone dancing merrily in the new old-fashioned way.
Colleen just walked in and shook her head no. Like, what? What are you talking about? See, I'll hear, right, I have my headphones on, so she's not hearing the music. She just gets to hear my wonderful singing. Yeah, and so, like a typical daughter, she goes ahead and she says no. No, Dad. Marine Corps news today. In the news is somebody that some friends of mine saved. Kyle Carpenter received his diploma, I guess, at the winter commencement at the University of South Carolina. So congratulations to him. He received his bachelor's degree in international studies on Monday and was recognized during the ceremony. Leading to applause from the entire crowd. And then he's quoted, "That was one of the most incredible moments since I woke up at the hospital and realized I had a second chance at life." Carpenter was credited for saving the life of a fellow Marine by shielding him from an exploding grenade in Afghanistan in 2010. He received the nation's highest military honor from Barack Obama in 2014. He lost his right eye, suffered two collapsed lungs, broken bones, leading to dozens of surgeries. Now Carpenter is weighing the options for life after college. He said he plans to continue work with Veterans Group and serving as a motivational speaker. "My college experience was like everyone else's. I learned a lot. I gained a new perspective on the world and on people that I'm so thankful and appreciative for. I was first and foremost a fellow Gamecock and a friend before a Medal of Honor recipient. I just had 4 years that was too special to put into words." The article's in The State, which I believe is the South Carolina State newspaper. The background story behind that, if you've never heard me say it, is you heard his injuries, two collapsed lungs, an eye out, so he's got, you can see where the damage is. And they were in an OP in a compound that they had just occupied within the last 24 hours, I believe, if my memory serves me correct, when it happened. And when it happened, we didn't know what happened. But their injuries were awful. And the other Marine had traumatic brain injury. You know, Corporal Carpenter shielded him with his body. They're both up there, and somebody had infiltrated through the compound across the road. And the road wasn't that wide at the point where they threw it. The OP was adjacent to that, and so the grenade landed in there. And they also everybody else heard was grenade. Anyway, so that's how he got wounded. And I remember talking, you know, as we're running the medevac, "Do you have any idea what happened?" And they said, "No, all we heard was grenade." And so you didn't know, was it an accident? Where'd the grenade come from? So anyway. But we had two great air officers. You've heard one here on a number of occasions, Kurt Knowles, and another guy who's now a squadron commander down at Miramar of an F-18 squadron, Metro, Lieutenant Colonel Rich Elaine. And they are smart, motivated, good dudes with, you know, Mike and I were giving Rudy is Kurt Knowles. We were giving him a tough time last week about something. But anyway, they constantly looked at the way business was done and looked for ways to improve it. And so what they did, and so we talked about medevac time, and right, there's the golden hour, right? So anyway, what they did was they shortened the sequence of events to get an aircraft into the air. And so we had a conversation one day, and on their end, what they were asking pilots to do in the 130-degree weather was when a medevac happens, go and turn your bird. Don't wait to be the one told that you're going to get it and then go turn your bird. You're turning your bird concurrently because you know you're probably going to get tasked with it. And now that might have been at two different airfields. You know, two different squadrons are both turning up. But if you're not doing that, what are you doing? Sitting in the ready room waiting? So they went and they talked to the squadrons, and the squadron said, okay. And the first one that did it was our dust-off squadron, and they're the ones that ran the medevac that day. And you shave 20 minutes off a medevac? I mean, that's a big deal. And that's what they did. And then what I did was I would go talk to the battalions and tell them, we need five elements to launch the bird. We need a grid. We need a call sign and a frequency. We need the number of patients. We need their injuries. And we need to know whether the LZ is hot or cold. Now, you're going to know their location from tracking them or their approximate location, right? All you need to know is it an ID or gunshot, right? And then it just tell me ID, lower extremity, and then we'll unscrew it on the fly. Or if it's a gunshot wound, and that's going to be an extremity because wearing your flak jacket. So, you know, I walked them through. Don't wait to get the perfect information for us to launch the bird. Get us what you have. So you need two pieces of information, really, from them. You're tracking them, so you know that. You know their call sign and frequency. You know that. You need number of people that are injured and injuries. You can and you kind of pretty much are, you know what that's going to be. Most of them here are IEDs. Not so much gunshot wounds, although they did happen. And then whether the LZ is hot or cold. You give me that information now, and that bird is going up in the air now. And it was, I want to say it was about 12-minute time of flight to Kyle Carpenter. And so that system, just shaving minutes off. So between shaving minutes on the battalion, getting us the information, and then the wing's ability to launch the medevac, saved Kyle Carpenter's life. When you read the statements and you read the interviews with the medical people saying, yeah, he was, you know, that they were astounded at how quick the medevac got there from the time they called it in. And then, you know, and it was, you know, one of the things I'm most proud of in terms of, you know, what I did there, we would have guys, and you communicate now in chat windows. So just like you used to have a radio frequency, right? Battalion TAC 1, Battalion TAC 2, right? Logistics going over TAC 2, ops going over TAC 1. You know, and then companies have TAC 1, TAC 2. So you have those same things, but they're chat windows now. And so you'll have a guy at the company who's listening to radios, and he's report, this patrol is in the vicinity of this grid, and they just reported contact. What you'll see is contact and then a grid. And so you can watch that as a higher headquarters, and what it allows you to do is you don't act on it till they request something, but it allows you to move the implements and get them ready. So when they begin to turn around to ask for the 3/4-inch socket, right? You're standing there with the socket, and then when they turn 1/8 inch, you put it in their hand. So they don't have to turn around and walk back to the truck and get the socket. All they have to do is move their shoulder, and you put it in their hand. And they look, and you're like, how did you know? Like, I'm clairvoyant, man. Don't worry about it. And so the way we fight now and communicate in terms of command and control are these chat windows. And so, you know, and then we have these big screen monitors, right? So the guys that are watching, and then there's certain people, and this was atypical to a combat operations center, but I did that, you know, for parts of 3 years in combat. And I'll tell you what, there's nobody better in the Marine Corps than I was. Nobody. And I don't say that with any bit of arrogance at all. But I had a chance to, you know, most, you don't, as an officer, you don't go back and do the same thing 3 times. I did, though. I couldn't get promoted. And so I was pretty good at it. So we had certain guys whose jobs was to watch certain windows. And then the other thing that you can do with technology now is when certain words would hit in Windows, they would come up red. So as opposed to reading every line, right? So you say, take the word medevac, right? Turn that red. So you may be watching six different boxes, but all of a sudden, the color catches your eye, and your eyeball slews to that, right? So the program we used that we can't use in the United States for some reason was called MerkChat. And I don't know who trademarks it, but the DOD used it. And it was awesome. It was absolutely, positively awesome. And so we would have lists, right? Turn these words red, turn these words yellow, turn these words turquoise, turn these words, you know, magenta or something, right? So red was wounded, killed in action, okay? Yellow is kinetic events, being taken under fire, all the different AK, right, is going to denote that. Machine gun, you know, all the different words that get used to, you turn those yellow, and all of a sudden, boom, you see yellow, you know there's a kinetic event. Turquoise that involves might be civilian stuff. And so we had these categories. And so when the first call from the company to the battalion went, and another word that you turned red was urgent. It was S/B for urgent medevac. So there's a Lance Corporal or a Corporal, I think it was Lance Corporal Ipina, sitting there in the RCT-1 COC at Camp Dwyer in Afghanistan, and just on another day, because we did this every fucking day, okay, is, you know, our job was to help kill people and help save people, and we took it seriously. And so every time I see Kyle Carpenter in the news, I remember this. And I'm filled with a tremendous sense of pride. Cause that kid is dead if it wasn't for these Marines. And so standby for urgent medevac hits. I want to say Carpenter was in 2-8 or 2-9. I can't remember. But that was the part of the battlefield that they were operating in. And, so, Ipina just yells loud, you know, stand by for urgent medevac, and everybody else slews, right? Rudy, Rudy would then, you know, just quick merc chat to dust off, stand by for urgent medevac, and they would run to the bird. They would run to the bird as soon as it happened because we knew the area that dust off would work. These guys are in that area. Boom, you know, make sure you have them moving. So concurrently, right, now, I'm watching, I know they're busy in their COC, and I'm giving them about 60 to 90 seconds to tell me something, right, before I reach down and say, let's go, and boom, it comes right away, you know, approximate grid, IED, LZ's cool, and I'm like, got it, and we move that information, and they gave us the other two elements. Well, you know, then they followed up with call sign frequency and whatever else. And that thing got off the ground within minutes. So from the explosion of the grenade, you can see all the stuff that happened concurrently. And then, it's, like I said, it's about a 12-minute time of flight, I think, to where they were. So that medevac got to him in maybe less than 20 minutes after he was injured, which is, you know, pretty amazing. And he was on an operating table in less than 30 minutes. And it was, you know, so whenever I see the story, I look back on that day and I think about all the different hard work, you know, and where does everybody want to be? Young Marines want to be in a combat operations center? But you know what? You're doing more than pass along information if you know what you're doing. you are helping guys who have life much tougher than you do, and you go there every day to make a difference. And we had, awesome young Marines, and trying to teach them how to keep your head in the game, the difference that they could make, and just awesome, awesome, awesome stuff. So, Kyle Carpenter. Yeah, owes his life to Lance Corporals and Sergeants, and that he's has never met, and the dust off pilots and the squadron commander was a former Ranger. So when Rudy tells a story about going over and talking to him, and he said, "Hey, we're all about it, man." And those dust off dudes, if that LZ wasn't cold, and it was urgent medevac, they said, "Let's go, boys," and they'd go nose down right into those LZs. They were studs. So much so that Rudy and I were talking. He says, "Hey, we need to do something special for these guys." And so we organized kind of a special Thanksgiving meal for them and took it over, and we all signed something that we printed out with the RCT1 logo, and we built a frame for it, and we all signed it because they had done some pretty incredible stuff under fire, and it wasn't lost on us, and we wanted to say thank you. So they were just a great organization, to work with. But Kyle Carpenter's the news. So every time I see that, reminds me of the story and in long format today. So awesome. The still oh my God. 70-year-old widow is duped out of $225,000 in a military romance scam. The FBI is investigating after a 70-year-old woman, Oklahoma woman, said she was duped out of more than $225,000 by someone online posing as a U.S. Army general stationed in Syria. Other interesting fight, and evidently the Dreamer issue is going to be taken up by Congress. But a Marine who was deported, kind of interesting. I don't know how you do this, but anyway, a Marine veteran deported to Mexico 15 years ago after he was convicted of a minor offense has won his fight to return to the United States and regain his permanent U.S. residency. Marco Chavez told the Associated Press on Monday that he was looking forward to reuniting with his three sons in Iowa after missing their childhood. He is now 45. They range in age from 17 to 21. One of the things I wanted to let my kids know is that they did have a father, and I did not plan to leave them, said Chavez, who has been living in the border city of Tijuana. That wasn't part of the plan with me and my ex-wife. I just want to be there to support them. They still might have resentment, but that's understandable. The immigration judge ruling last month in allowing Chavez's return, it came after California Governor Jerry Brown, a Democrat, pardoned Chavez. He was convicted in 1998 of animal cruelty for a dog beating, but said another person was responsible. He was sentenced to 2 years in state prison, was released after 15 months because of good behavior, and later deported. Anyway, former Marine in news. Early bird, that's about all the Marine news there is, which is not necessarily a bad thing. Top five stories. Number one, from Defense News, here's how the Trump administration could make it easier to sell military drones. First of all, like, who are we selling to and why are we selling them? But, okay. Two, rebels in Yemen fire second ballistic missile at the Saudi capital. Now, this story, again, it's hard to get your hands around some things that come out of the kingdom sometimes. But this is in the New York Times. And rebels in Yemen fired a second ballistic missile on Tuesday at Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia, for a second time in 2 months. Though Saudi officials said that it had been intercepted and there were no casualties. Around midday, a large boom startled many in Riyadh, including customers at a cafe in the center of the city, where several ran outside to see a puff of gray smoke in the sky and black smoke rising from the ground nearby, presumably from the launch site of the defense system. And there's a it looks like a Twitter video of the trail of look like a what would be a missile, an intercept missile, possibly from a Patriot battery. A spokesman for the Saudi-led military coalition said the missile had been aimed at a residential area and had been intercepted without any casualties. So according, but there was a story last month that said that the Patriot missile system did not intercept them. So anyway, that going for it. Again, that's all the dance of Iran and Saudi Arabia. And I'll tell you what, there will be hell to pay if an Iranian-backed agent shoots a missile and kills people in Riyadh. There will be hell to pay. That will launch that region into a new confrontation. And I will say that it will the Saudis will turn around and look at the Iranians. The question is, you know, can the Saudis can't dance with the Iranians? The Iranian military is much bigger. At least that's my understanding. We'll have to check on that. And so that is a dangerous one. That is a dangerous one. Third story. NBC News reporting North Korea tensions. South urges U.S. to delay military drills ahead of the Olympics. You know, I talked a little bit earlier about, in teasing the Ralph Kingsbury interview, I talked a little bit about moving to North Dakota and my friend Pierre Lamoureux, whose daughters play on the women's Olympic team. And I was talking to Monique and Jocelyn when they're down in Tampa training with the women's Olympic team. And they were saying, Mike, what do you think? Do you think that, you know, it's going to be cool? And I said, well, if you watch the way he behaves, do you think he's going to allow the Olympics to come and go and not create something? And they went, ugh. I said, yeah. So I wish I could tell you something else, but truth be told, he's going to have the entire, you know, eyes of the world on him. And he's not going to seize that opportunity to make some point. Okay. And do you think the point that he'll make is, you know, a benign one and a very soft-handed one, even-keeled approach? We've yet to see that from that young man. The other story, this young man is transgender and ready to enlist on January 1. Story about Nicholas Talbot, who's openly transgender. Number five, and you know what? If you haven't listened to the shows we've done about transgender, you ought to, because the issue is more complex than I certainly thought, and so I would commend that you. There was one interview with Dan Lamont that we talked about it. Another one with Alex Hollings from Sofra. We talked about the transgender issue. And interesting stuff, and waiting on a DOD policy about what how it can happen. And the fifth article on the early bird is Japan approves the introduction of the Aegis Ashore missile defense system amid North Korea's threat. So Japan will install two land-based Aegis Ashore missile defense system to defend against North Korea's growing nuclear and ballistic missile threat. And that's a look at the news. All right, we're going to take a break. When you come back, I'm going to introduce you to one of the coolest and most humbling interviews I've ever done in my life. I've been doing radio since 2000, between deployments and my time on active duty. And I've done some awesome interviews. In fact, in the year and a half we've been on All Marine Radio, the interviews I've done here alone they're incredible. But I would tell you that this is one of the most humbling things that I've ever heard. And that is, you're going to hear a guy by the name of Ralph Kingsbury, served in the Army in Korea in the 60s and was, anyway, you'll hear from him next on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio. Don't touch that dial. Trust me.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.